Hello, this is the Leg Show. We're going to get started in just a couple minutes here. In the meantime, if you have IRC access, be sure to join us at irc.thelinuxshow.com and channel Pound Linux Show. So hang in there. We'll get started right after these messages.
You're listening to The Linux Show. Or maybe you're thinking about it. I don't know. This is probably a commercial. You want to find out about Linux and open source? Check us out at www.linuxshow.com for the best in Linux community news. Check us out.
Right. And we're back. This is the Tuesday night edition of The Linux Show for Tuesday. What is it? The 24th of September, 2002. Bringing you another edition of The Linux Show. Big change. We're coming to you live from Chicago instead of Aurora. Actually, Kevin right now is in Aurora, but only for a while. Where are you going to move to, Kevin? Galena?
That's the plan.
Galena or somewhere around there. And I'm presently in...
I'm sorry. There's no answer.
Uh-oh. That was Doc. I'm presently in Naperville, and we're teleconferencing to Chicago with our new, brand new pop that we just have finished half completing. It's not totally complete, but we finished half completing it. We've got a whole bunch of new servers or rebuilt servers that have been installed there, and I've got a truck full of additional equipment that has come out of our old Aurora location that we're going to begin installing tomorrow. And so the new pop in Chicago continues to grow. Unfortunately, for the next week or two, we will probably be a little shy on the bandwidth because we still haven't got one of our T1s installed, and people at the Viblio are having trouble keeping their connection to us solid. We've been having trouble with them all day long, and really the last couple of shows we've had a little problem with keeping connected with them. So once again, we are coming to you and saying, if you would like to be a mirror site for the Linux Show, we are looking for locations around the world. We've got a dual path to this for a change. If you look on the front page of the Linux Show website, www.thelinuxshow.com, there is a link about halfway down the page. There is a little a link to a little mini FAQ, and it is mini. It's only a couple lines long for what you need to do to set up a mirror location for the Linux Show. We're anticipating that people who are going to take advantage of that little link are people who have just a little bit of bandwidth. If you do have a significant amount of bandwidth, please drop an email to staff@thelinuxshow.com and we'll contact you directly. But let's go ahead and get the show kicked off. We've got most of the crew here. We haven't hooked up with Doc yet, but I'm sure he'll be joining us later. But out on the West Coast is Arnie Flonis. How are you doing tonight, Arnie?
Oh, busier than a one-armed coat hanger.
Welcome back after our impromptu one-week absence.
You guys got to start learning to pay your phone bills, huh?
Yeah, it wasn't that. It was a combination of carelessness and cluelessness and, frankly, just not totally paying attention on my part. I actually screwed up one of our domain names and sort of compounded the issue a little bit. When we moved the location from Aurora, we also had been in the process of moving registries.
I've done that myself and got it all screwed up myself. It's really easy to do, especially if you're involved with Internet in any way, shape, or form.
And which domain do I screw up?
Linuxshow.com.
When we got it fixed prior to the show, but there was just so much other stuff that had gone wrong during Monday and Tuesday of last week that we knew it was hopeless. We were just not going to get the servers up in time, so we cashed it in. But I'm glad to hear that things are going well with you.
108 degrees here in Southern California today, and
yep.
The fires are going. I can see the flames from my front yard of the Williams Forest, fire right now, and the sky, the whole northern sky is, you can't see Mount San Antonio today because it's just completely obscured by the smoke.
Wow, that's spooky, Arnie.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, man, it looks like a big nuclear mushroom cloud. It's just gigantic. It's going up way up into the stratosphere, the smoke. And you guys, it'll drop on you guys in the 2 days hence.
Nah, we're having actually the beginning of our jet stream weather from the north. And so the temperatures around Chicago have been, around 60 for the last week.
Ah.
And,
let me know when you get your first Alberta Clipper.
Absolutely crystal clear, though.
This
is actually, you're from Michigan, and so you know that this type of year, the weather is crisp. It may be a little cool, but the air is clean because it's coming straight out of Canada.
Yeah, good time to go get a telescope and go point it at the sky in the evening.
Yeah, absolutely. It really is. It's a pleasure to be around Chicago this time of year. Weather is finally livable. Not too cold, not too hot for a change. Out on the other coast, Russ Pavlicek. How you doing, Russ?
Oh, hanging in. It's pleasantly cool out here. No smoke in the sky, thankfully. Although my sinuses are doing flip-flops from the usual change of seasons. But it's actually very comfortable. And we needed the break from the heat, and that's what we've got now.
Yeah,
so I'm pretty thrilled.
Well, we'd be concerned if the skies above Washington, D.C. were smoky right now.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
So that's a good thing. Good thing indeed. And Kevin and I, of course, as usual, we're here in Illinois. I'm going to have to get used to not saying here in Aurora as we have excavated ourselves from our previous location. It'll take a little getting used, but as time goes on, changes. But let's go ahead and jump right.
I'm sorry, there's no answer.
Doc's still not there. While we're waiting for Doc, we'll go ahead and jump right into the first segment. Arnie, I'm going to go ahead and start with you because I know you've got a lot you want to cover and you've got a limited amount of time. Arnie, for those of you who aren't aware, Arnie's a high school teacher. And isn't a mad dash to his classroom set up. And so he's got to actually cut out a little early tonight after the extended first segment. We're going to go about 45 minutes on the first segment, take a break, and come back for a short second segment. And Arnie will leave at that time. But Arnie, go ahead. What are your stories this week?
Well, I picked up this one was too good to be juicy to pass up. This week's E-Week has this great big story on the front page, prominent right at the bottom, Sun to Keep Linux Out of High End. And I just love that title. I mean, E-Week just puts, you know, they spin like tops, you know. and you know, I just had visions of, you know, is this a global wish that, you know, does Linux not be used in the high end? How are they going to keep Linux out of the high end, you know? And, like clusters? Or how are they going to do this? And apparently what the article is about is that Sun is not going to be using Linux on their Spark stations and their high-end. But I'm sure, you know, what if people just, what if there's a Spark port, you know? You know, when someone on Debian completes a Spark port, how are they going to keep that out of the high end?
Well,
IBM found out about that.
It's wishful thinking on Sun's part.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of a cluelessness. A la SCO, formerly called Caldera, and HP Compaq. I mean, these guys just don't understand Linux marketing. They think, well, we're going to target Linux here. And, you know, they just don't understand it. You know, yeah, it's fine. But we're going to keep it out of the high end. We're not going to support the high end. Well, you know what? You can't not support the high end if the market wants to go there.
Yeah, well, the irony is HP Compaq, at least according to Judy Chavez, is going to keep Linux out of the desktop and keep it out of the low end.
Oh, okay. So we got Sun keeping it out of the high end, and we have HP Compact keeping it out of the low end.
Yes. HP is only interested with Linux on the Fortune 200 type of clientele.
Fortune 200.
Yeah.
Oh, in other words, if you're buying lots of workstations, right?
The big enterprises.
Oh, no, no, servers. That's right. HP wants it for server only.
Servers, yes.
And, of course, you know, Sharp says, hey, we got a great, great, and this is my second story. Mark Gibbs of Network World Fusion has written a really, really wonderful article. I hope the link's up on the Linux Show site. A really wonderful article, you know, kind of like an editorial type thing, called Zowie Zoris. And he's, you know, it's a very realistic look at this machine, and he really likes it. And, of course, he understands that there's some problems. Of course there are some problems. But there is this really phenomenal link, which I am using. Since I got my Zoris, I discovered this link right quick. It's called the Zoris Software Index. And I hope that link's up on the Linux Show site. It's a www.killefiz.de/Zoris. And this is the fresh meat for the Zoris machine, and they have a mailing list you can subscribe to where every day you can get a summary of the software on the site that's being updated. Now, every day I get like 10 or 12 links to mailed to me in one summary of things that are updated. And, you know, some of this stuff is getting updated 2 or 3 times a week, and we're talking substantive stuff. There's an application called Cinderella, and since I'm a math teacher, this is really right up my alley, which does geometry, which is a geometry sketch pad for, it's a commercial product that runs on the Zoris, and I've tried to load it. It runs a little bit. They're still having problems with it, but it runs under Java, and it does pretty good. There's a few problems with it, but still, this is a major app. There's a lot of good stuff out there. Some good games coming on strong. The applications, commercial ones, are very inexpensive. And this machine is going. You know, anybody who's interested in
Zoris
is. Zoris is starting to move.
So that's on the ultra-low end.
Yeah, but it's really great. I mean, it's a wonderful machine.
Well, I want to, it is. I have no arguments with you. I think we all have one now.
Do you guys have one?
Yep.
Kevin's got one, right?
Yep.
Yeah. And Russ, you got one?
Yeah, I definitely got one.
Yeah.
I just got one. Doc,
I got a 256 meg compact flash card in it at the computer show for $80. Pretty cheap.
Wow. Cool.
And it's great. I got to load it up with music.
I still haven't used mine as a wireless music player yet, like Doc has, but
I want to do that too.
That's my goal sometime in the next couple weeks. I've got a couple of 802.11b wireless broadcast points set up in my house, betaing some equipment, and I'm going to go ahead and broadcast my own music on 802.11b.
Yeah, to the neighborhood, huh?
Well, I'm not saying that, Arnie.
Yeah.
Illegal.
Oh, I don't know.
Arnie, that would be illegal. I wouldn't do that.
Oh, shameless, shameless. The last thing I had was just an article on the Palm to launch first OS product in October 28th. This was from InfoWorld. My observation on that, my take on that is that basically, you know, Palm is so late with this upgrade and, you know, getting a lot of the goodies that are already on, like, for instance, the Zoris and some other platforms. The Zoris networks really, really well. I mean, it just does it. And I guess the wireless is pretty phenomenal. I have no experience with it. But Palm has been doing wireless networking for some time. But I think that the Zoris could leapfrog Palm, if Linux could leapfrog Palm in these areas.
If my experience with Palm is indicative of their customer service, then I don't think it would take much to leapfrog them. Let's talk about Clueless Companies, a.k.a. Compact Sun et al. Palm has turned into a clueless company. They have this wonderful concept that they came up with the wireless PDAs.
Oh, yeah.
With the Palm 7, and now the 501, the 701, the 703. There's a whole bunch of the wireless PDAs that, in concept, have been good products. Now, the first one that I chose to buy, you know, stupid me, was I saw an opportunity to buy a Palm 7 really cheap. It was like $110 for the Palm 7, including the folding Happy Hacker keyboard. So that was a bargain I could not pass up, you know, at $110.
Mm-hmm.
However, I immediately came to the conclusion that their network is not IP-based, and so at least on the Palm 7, you could not run a shell without plugging the thing into a landline, and then you could run a shell. So my whole point in getting the damn Palm to begin with was to run shell to a shell server and look at my Pine Mail. I mean, that's what I wanted to do with it, and it didn't work. And so as of March, I have been trying to discontinue my $40 a month wireless internet service with Palm, and they are still billing me $45 a month.
Well, that's not good.
Even though once or twice a month I cancel the account, I have gotten to the point where I canceled the credit card just to get rid of these people. And so, you know, I'm presuming that I'm not unique, that they're doing similar stuff, you know, slow processing of cancellations to suck money out of people. So, yeah, and this is really, really, I was canceling the service and was going to buy a different Palm, one that was IP-based, and continue using them, but now I'm not.
Well, I still use my Palm 3 a little bit. I mean, you know, not a whole lot.
I'm
my Zorros, but
I'm not going to be a customer of theirs anymore. I'm pissed off at them. So
yeah, well, I still got a Palm 3. I still use it once in a while. It's kind of
so,
cute.
Any more stories?
That's it.
Well, I sort of want to back up to one of your stories, but before I do, I'm going to sort of jump around and let other people talk. But I want to come back to your story about Sun. Okay.
That's definitely a hot one.
And because I think you covered it too quick, but let everybody sort of jump in here. Russ, have you got a few hot stories of the week?
Well, I got a couple. Over at Linux Orbit, there is a review for something called OE1 Home Base Desktop. And I saw a couple of references to this. I think like both Slashdot and Linux Today are carrying references to it. And I was thinking, well, what could be unique about this? But as I look at it, it looks actually pretty cool. And they do have some links to some screens. It's an interesting beast, and I haven't played with it yet. I hope to, but they're doing some interesting things on the desktop. And I think this is incredibly timely because we're seeing all over the place the interest in the desktop. Obviously, Red Hat is going in that direction per their announcement. Zandros, I guess, is about to do their release. And, of course, you have like Mandrake and Lycoris that have been around for a long time. So I think that there's going to be a lot of interesting things coming on the desktop at a time when, you know, maybe some of us who've been around for a while are figuring, well, there's not going to be much more that's really needed on the desktop. But I think there's going to be a lot of surprises. And this one is kind of surprising, as far as I'm concerned. The second thing I have over at Slashdot, some people are concerned apparently that Hewlett Packard is doing a major push for .NET, and they're
HP,
saying.
HP, you said?
Excuse me?
HP.
Yes.
The new HP.
The new HP, apparently, according to the CNET report. Over at Slashdot is going to be devoting 3,000 consultants from the services unit and another 5,000 people in sales and support to support a .NET series of products. And, you know, some of the commentary over there, you know, people are being a bit surprised that they do this. Frankly, to me, being a former Compaq employee, this sounds exactly like what I would expect out of Compaq. And, in fact, looking at the article, they said that Microsoft and Compaq had been working on this deal when the merger occurred. And this just seems to me to indicate that there is a lot of Compaq alive and well within the new HP superstructure, because this is exactly what I would expect. And, in fact, when I was working with services over there, this was the sort of thing I was up against, that they were looking at Linux services, but they didn't want anything to interfere with the Microsoft services. And when you're dedicating thousands of people to Microsoft services, that doesn't necessarily leave you a whole lot of room to develop Linux services. So,
which is why these companies are saying, we want to keep Linux out of X market.
Exactly, because they have established a market that is profitable for them.
Well, I mean, also they have Big Brother Bill Gates working at them to saying, "Hey, we want this market to ourselves."
Well, but in the case of Sun, it's different. I mean, in the case of Sun, it's the market that they've established that they want to get. They want the revenue for Solaris on Spark, et cetera. In this case, you know, I don't know if that's necessarily a Big Brother. It's what they see their market niche as.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they've agreed to this apparently, and. I don't find it surprising. So it's kind of clear why some of these companies are behaving the way they are. They're making money with the current product set, and they don't want to upset the apple cart. And quite frankly, I think that's, you know, in my mind, that's a lot of what happened when Caldera became SCO Group. They had a bunch of resellers who were quite good at reselling within the SCO market, and so they didn't want to upset the apple cart. They could make money that way.
And can you imagine over at Sun, it's probably even more radical when you look at their distribution channel. You're looking at Sun boxes that sell for, you know, anywhere from, you know, 30,000, and I'm talking about the server class stuff, anywhere from like 25,000 to 30,000 to in excess of 100K for the hardware, and you're talking about Solaris is, you know, probably not a huge portion of that sale, but it's still a nice little add-on, you know, for, you know, the bigger machines. It could be $7,000-$10,000 for a Solaris license on a big machine, and so their reseller channel is looking at the turning away from Solaris as a potential, you know, drain out of their pocket. And so I'm sure they are screaming about it, just like the SCO people were complaining. So I think you're right. You're right on that assessment.
Okay. Outside of that, one quickie in that there's a story that Mozilla is going to try to come up with a faster browser using the Gecko engine. As a way of overcoming some of the problems that they've had with complaints about Mozilla being slow. And that'll be interesting. I mean, certainly things like Galleon have been quite interesting in that area. So it'll
Galleon's quick.
Yeah, and it'll be quite interesting to see what comes out of this effort, if they make a good effort at it.
I'd like to make some comments on the OE1 stuff, Russ.
Yeah, go for it.
That is a nice-looking desktop. I mean, for people who just want to use the computer, and it does look promising. However, they're falling into the Red Hat is Linux, Linux is Red Hat type thing, and basically they do not support anything but the Red Hat releases, and I guess they also support Mandrake, which, after all, is just Red Hat.
Now, let's Mandrake used to be just Red Hat.
But it's a close cousin.
They have similar origins, yes.
Which is explains why OE1 also, and it really is nice. But you know, they do not support all the Linux distributions, and of course, what I'm wondering why they wouldn't support something like Debian. I mean, Debian adheres to the standards too. And
Well, it may well be a question of getting around to it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And the fact that they've apparently announced that they're about to support Mandrake, probably for the reason that you specified, that it's the closest cousin. And it wouldn't surprise me if some of the others are going to be in the offing. Yeah. There, but
that's the only criticism I would have of that is that, you know, Linux is not Red Hat. And
right.
Of course, they're going for the big market share. But it's also, they do release source code, and they do have a CVS download you could use. And so maybe it won't be long before there's a Debian port.
Okay, well, let's stick with this desktop theme, and Linux is not Red Hat as well for a couple minutes, because one of the things I wanted to talk about, and Kevin, please jump in on this, because I know you have been playing around with it. We're planning on doing a complete review next week for the both the Red Hat 7.3 and also the beta that has all of a sudden started to show up the last day or two on the Mira servers. So we're going to play around with the beta during the course of the week and do a review and compare it to 7.3, because I have been very pleased at the ease of setting up some pretty complicated servers with the 7.2 and 7.3 release of Red Hat. The surprising, you know, thing that sort of leaked out last week, actually it was 2 weeks ago when it leaked out, is that including with this beta will be Red Hat's first direct attempt at coming up with a Red Hat-centric desktop. And so, number one, what do you think, guys? Do you think this is as much as we complain about SUSE and SCO/Caldera and their minions, the other members of the United Linux effort, aren't things shaping up right now for a play out of Red Hat to make Red Hat Linux? I mean, they've not only gone to the point with the desktop, and I'm not saying what they're doing is necessarily wrong from a user standpoint, but they've taken both the KDE and GNOME desktops, and they've modified them both so they look the same and they operate the same.
Well, that's just look and feel, and you can change both of those without changing much code, you know.
Well, yeah, and I, being honest with you, I don't know whether what they're changing in terms of look and feel is strictly cosmetic, or if they are changing code.
Yeah, you can do a lot with both KDE and GNOME to make them look different.
Yeah, but the examples that I've been looking at up to this point are pretty impressive in terms of the desktop they're putting together. Have any of you guys had a chance to look at Kevin? I know you've looked at it, so.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty slick looking. I mean, I know one of the biggest complaints people who aren't familiar with Linux had is that it's hard to figure out what does what, since a lot of Linux applications have names that don't really reflect what they're doing. So one of the big things they did was just name the mail program, which is Evolution, just email, and have a word processor and a spreadsheet and all that right on the menu, just as what they are, so everyone can find them.
Why would they want to rename a substantial application like Evolution?
Well, if you never saw Linux before, are you going to know what Evolution does?
Well, I mean, I understand that. I mean, you name it on the menu. Is that what you mean?
Right. When you run it, it's the same program as always. It's just they have simplified the menus, so.
Oh, that's nothing wrong with that.
A lot more sense.
If you're targeting new users and stuff, and you're making a jump for the desktop, and I think the time is ripe for that. I mean, even eWeek, ZDNet, had an article this week on Linux on the desktop. It's time. I don't have the link, but if you go to ZDNet, I think you can find it. I think it's on the Clueless.
Yeah, Lacoris did the same thing when they were building their desktop in terms of they really went out of their way to not only categorize applications by what they do, but they went out of their way to make the Amethyst version of Lycoris really look like Windows XP. So people who were familiar with a Windows machine could load Lycoris, and cosmetically, at least initially, they may even think that it was an XP machine. But it's not. It's running Lycoris. And so I think there's a lot of sense, and I think it's fairly obvious. Don't you all agree that it's fairly obvious? We've gone through a whole series of evolutionary steps, you know, the year of the embedded market, the year of the supercomputer, the year of the mainframe. It's starting to really look that 2003 is going to be the year of the desktop battle, because everybody's now making a play, it seems, into the desktops.
Well, who do you see other than Linux and Microsoft?
No. I mean all the Linux entries. I mean,
a lot
of Linux desktops coming out.
Well, I mean, this presumes then, with some naivety, that there has to be one winner. I mean, winner takes all. Marketing isn't winner takes all. Marketing is doesn't always have to be.
Marketing is about a profitable market share.
Well, that's fine. That could be like a small market share. You know? Apple's lived on that for decades now.
Yes, they have. Meagerly at times.
But, you know, hey, they also do it very well.
Yes, but meagerly at times.
That's fine. They make money.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't have to make the most money in the world. That's not my definition of success. Success is to be even modestly making money.
Yeah, but that is the definition that the stockholders have in your typical corporation.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
The stockholders are also brain dead. You know, I mean, especially when you look at the stock averages these days.
Well, if you look at the stock averages these days, Ernie, it certainly doesn't prove that the stockholders are brain dead. It proves that they're smart enough to get out during a bad. Okay. So
touché.
There you commie.
Touché. Touché.
So there you commie. But, okay, well, any other stories, Russ?
Not directly, although probably in a week or two I'll be able to talk a bit more. Behind me I have my time-shifting box that I've been building out of some interesting little spare parts, but right now it captures TV programs for me all over the place, and it's been an interesting little adventure, and so I think I will hopefully discuss that in a week or two.
I'll look forward to that one. Let me jump in with one of mine, and then we'll hop over to Kevin for a couple of minutes. And I don't want to forget to go back to Sun. I really don't want to forget that story. But anyways, before I forget, because I've been emailed already about this story that I insinuated at on our website this afternoon, and that is about the new RFC that is presently being drafted. For those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, RFCs are requests for comments that have been published since day one being April 7th, 1969, the founding of ARPANET, or I should say the description of ARPANET by the founders, a document written, authored in principle by Steve Croker and his minions, people like Vint Cerf and others. And since then, there have been, it's probably somewhere around 1,200 RFCs published since then. And you can, at the website for the Internet Society, you can see all the RFCs listed. Or just go to Google and type in RFC-1, and it'll bring you to the RFC webpage and list some. When was it, Kevin? A year ago, 18 months ago, we had as a guest somebody who had published an RFC based upon an organic version of Ethernet, and that Ethernet was based upon carrier pigeons. And a group of technologists got together and postulated a theoretical standard for developing Ethernet over carrier pigeon. They wrote up their RFC, published it to the Internet Society, and then they formally tested it by getting a bunch of carrier pigeons. Well, I have an inside scoop, and this is an absolute scoop. This is going to be, until it's actually published to the Internet Society, I've got the inside track on this story. Some engineers from Northern Illinois, I happen to have been sitting on a lakefront with a couple of engineers in Northern Illinois who were bitching to me about how bad the tech market was up in the Wisconsin market. And most of the people right along the Illinois border really work in the Wisconsin market in the Milwaukee area. And so to kill the time, I told them that they should spend their time doing good works like developing new variances of Ethernet for the Internet Society. And although I was joking, these guys took me seriously. And they have got about 90% drafted right now a organic version of Ethernet, which they have already tested, that performs significantly better than the organic version based on carrier pigeon. And they have developed their version of Ethernet based upon a phenomenon that you frequently see at county fairs around the United States, and that is the pony ride. And your typical pony ride at a county fair is a round tent and has a post in the middle of the tent and an array of ponies, anywhere from half a dozen to a dozen, depending upon the size of the tent, arranged in a circle. And these ponies are connected to tethers, and they walk around this center post in the middle. And these gentlemen, these engineers, were sitting there staring at this pony ride at the Woodstock County Fair in Northern Illinois the first week of August, and the brainstorm hit them instantly that what they were witnessing was an organic version of IBM's token passing ring topology. And so they have drafted up and tested, and they've actually got a couple of hundred packet tests that they have got documented. And so this is going to be a really cool story to follow up and see if this document actually gets accepted by the Internet Society.
That's great.
Isn't that funny? I mean, think about that. Okay, here, let me describe this to you, what these guys were telling me. Okay, the potential variant issues that this has with it, because you not only have to contend with the speed of the ponies not being consistent, you have to contend with certain ponies stopping to take a crap, and that could cause packet collisions. And, of course, you have to deal with, at least in the American society, you have to deal with the child labor laws of the four-year-old sitting on the back of the pony. And so there's a lot of ramifications that could take place. But just for your reference, to send 4 32-byte packets over a organically based pony Ethernet ring network. Let me do the math real quickly in my head. Takes 3 minutes and 45 seconds. And I will actually have a document from them that will prove these case in points. And so as you can tell, if you have any knowledge of the carrier pigeon test that took actually several hours to transport their 4 32-bit packets of information, there is no question that the pony-based ring topology is vastly superior to the carrier pigeon. However, it is far better suited for a local area network application than a wide area network application. So we'll leave it at that. Kevin, have you got any stories of the week product releases you want to tell us about?
Well, the main thing is just keep an eye out for Red Hat 8. Looks like the mirrors are starting to get copies of it, so I'm guessing they're probably going to release it Monday. They usually have releases Monday morning. There's also an interesting story on Slashdot the other day pointing out that, what's the name of it, the online DVD service.
DVD Today?
No, the DVD rental via the...
Yeah, DVD Now?
Yeah, that they're actually putting out more bandwidth via the post office than the Internet is handling. They're shipping something like 1,500 terabytes a month, whereas the Internet's doing like 2,000 terabits a month.
Really?
Yeah.
That's incredible. That's just amazing. And are they shipping that stuff through the post office? Or?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. That's amazing. Have they got the map documented somewhere?
Yeah, it was on Slashdot either, I think, yesterday.
I'm going to
have to... But it just goes to show the first rule of networking is never underestimate the bandwidth of a grad student with a station wagon full of tape.
That's a fact. That is absolutely a fact. Okay, well, I'll tell you what. Let's take a short break. And maybe I can hook up with Doc while we're taking the break. And we'll come back and talk a little bit about Sun and then jump into segment number two and see what happens. Give you guys a scoop on the DSL project that we've been talking about for the last 3 months. So everybody hang in there. We will be right back with segment number two on The Linux Show.
I'd like to take this opportunity to thank the sponsors who make The Linux Show possible. I'd like to thank VA Linux. Oops, no, they're not VA Linux anymore. They are now VA Software. Hope they don't change their name again pretty soon. I'm going to have to make another commercial. But check out VA Software and learn all about the SourceForge development platform for internal company development projects. Or if you're just a little guy but want to get a flavor of it all, check out sourceforge.net and spread the word on open source development platforms.
And we're back.
This is the Linux Show for September the 24th, 2002. You guys don't know what I'm about, do you? Yes, we're talking about Linux stuff, aren't we? Getting back to the story that Arnie was talking about earlier in the show, before we jump into segment number two, about Sun. I wanted to approach this issue a little bit globally. I don't want to specifically pick on Sun per se, but I want to take on the issue globally. And for those of you who are listening or are on IRC, there's a link on our website titled Why Linux Will Conquer the World. There's a posting on Google Groups that is written by one of the Linux Show regulars. I think he has listened to just about every show, I'd say at least 95% of them over the course of the last couple of years. And that's David Mooring, our NZ heretic from New Zealand, a regular contributor and probably one of our best singular sources for links during the course of the show. So, David, keep up the good work. But David has a very interesting post out on Google Groups today, and I want everybody to get the opportunity to give it a read. I don't, have the time to read the entire article right now, but what I really want to do is I want to take the perspective right now because of things that we've all been talking about during the course of the last several weeks. Arnie, you talked a lot about Zaris. Different people have talked about big systems, little systems. It is absolutely, positively, totally clear that Linux has become a viral thing. And by that I mean that it has crept into every little niche and corner and crevice of the IT universe where infrastructure is an issue. And we're getting feedback from somebody.
It's me. It's Doc.
Oh, Doc!
Yeah. I'm actually sitting at a restaurant with Dave Siffrey. I'm trying to hold the noise down.
Oh, well, say hello to David Siffrey.
Yeah, I will.
It's totally clear that this has happened. And so it's very, very ironic when we're looking at this issue like of Sun wanting to keep Linux away from the big system and HP wanting to keep, they don't want to keep, they're just ignoring Linux on the desktop altogether because, in the words of Judy Chavez, Linux on the desktop is a totally inviolable entity, according to her, and she's the chief muckety-muck of Linux at HP, so we should take her seriously about the opinions of her corporation and their dealings with Linux as an infrastructure base. So taking this kind of I want to get back to your very first story, Arnie, because you were real short on it.
Well, I mean, basically I wanted to time for everybody else.
Well, I know, but let's go into that a little bit more detail.
Okay. Well, basically what's happened is Sun has decided not to support Linux on their Spark hardware. And that's an interesting decision to make. And, of course, the way eWeek put it was kind of inciting type of words, Sun to keep Linux out of the high end. My comment was it's kind of an interesting thing for me to put it because if they're really trying to keep it out of the high end, they may be better talk to IBM. But what will happen is that somebody's going to do a Spark port. And especially if Sun's in there with their Linux, it's gonna happen.
I mean, just like our friend down at what's his name? The accounting, doing the Linux accounting, ported the first mainframe Linux to IBM mainframe.
Linus.
Linus.
I remember Linus
yeah.
But
you know, that was an interesting thing, and you know, he basically did it on his lunch hour, and you know, Spark has long had a capability of compiling C, and it wouldn't take much to port the GNU tools, and you know, once that's done, Linux is just a compile away.
There is Linux on Spark. In fact,
yeah.
I have one on one of my Spark stations here.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
But I don't know the latest technology, the latest 64-bit. So.
But
you know,
there's
high end, but I don't have a lot of offhand.
And that Linux on Spark is not supported by Sun.
Yeah,
but you know,
supported by Sun, sure.
That's fine. I mean, they don't have to support it. You know, it'll still run on their. You know, what will happen is, and this is the viral nature of Linux that itself, is that what's going to happen here is that the consumer themselves will make the port, and it'll get used anyway in spite of Sun. So their intention to keep Linux off the high end from a good marketing choice for them as they see it, might not result in any success.
Yeah.
Can I jump in here, guys?
Sure.
I probably only have a few minutes. I had a long talk with a guy at Sun, and you know, it's pretty amazing. They want to make what they're doing with Linux about as vague as they possibly can, and part of this big solution and all that. But they definitely want to low end it. I mean, that's the whole thing. You know, it's a low end thing for them. You know, they see it as it's cubicleware. You know,
You know what? It's altogether from what I can read of their policy. It's altogether apparent that this is a low end thing for them.
Mm-hmm. No, it's not only low end; it's as low as it can get.
They're paying lip service, and that's it.
Dave Siffrey says as non-threatening to Sun's core business as possible. Yeah, that's true.
Let's not make money on it. Let's just keep it. Let's talk about it to get the Linux people involved. But you know, hey, you know, let's not do anything serious.
Cool. And let's sell services. I mean, they see themselves at that end in the service business. And see, the thing is that they want to work. You know, it's sort of like an introductory drug for them. You know, you work your way up to the big iron. You know, it's basically all the white box buyers out there. Their customers are buying lots and lots of white boxes and putting Linux on them anyway. So
yeah.
They want to be in their customers' supply chain for white boxes that are going to have Linux on them anyway.
One thing Dave Siffrey knows about is that Linux is all about service.
Yeah,
that's what it's all about. Marketing Linux is all about marketing service. And if you're, you know, and that's where it's at.
That's
the market.
It's a service platform.
That's all it is. I mean, then you can. But the thing is, when you recognize software is being something that needs service, then you've got a market. It's built in. And when you're trying to market software as a product, that's where it fails because you end up servicing it, and service becomes a second effect instead of a first effect.
Yeah. Now, they're selling network management and stuff like that, you know, so they're...
Oh, but this stuff, yeah, you can do that stuff, but...
You know, you buy their...
Itself.
You buy all the components and their MIBs, so they can do network management and all that kind of stuff. That's basically, you know, it's... Every large company is going to have big piles of white Linux boxes in them. Anyway, that's sort of a going trend.
Well,
and even the Hollywood types that I talked to the last couple of days kind of know that. Spent a bunch of time in the last 2 days at Digital Hollywood.
Order us all martinis, will you, Doc?
What's that?
Order us all the martinis.
Right.
Well, Doc, seeing as you're at dinner with Dave Siffrey and he's across the table from you, why don't you really quickly hand him the phone.
Wait, I'll tell you what, I'll just pass him the phone.
Hand him the phone.
Okay, here we go. Hi.
Hi, Dave.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, Dave Siffrey of Sputnik. haven't talked to you in a while about Sputnik. What's going on? What's the latest news?
Oh, gosh. So we've been very, very busy getting ready for our upcoming release of version 2.0 of our entire wireless products family, which includes a completely new and upgraded Sputnik Central Control that can that basically can manage a nearly unlimited number of APs and wireless users. A new protocol that allows us to much more effectively deal with failure, which is one of the big problems that we actually found out when you're managing a large network. You've got to really be able to seamlessly deal with the fact that the network goes down, it's unreliable, machines go down, they're unreliable. Heck, even sometimes your software goes down and it's unreliable. And you know, in dealing with a number of our customers who the big priority was, they wanted to make sure that service was as tolerant as possible of all of these potential failure conditions. That was, we spent a tremendous amount of time listening to our customers and re-engineering our products specifically for that. And so there's going to be a bunch of fun announcements coming out in the next couple of months, including a bunch of very low-cost Linux-based access points. You'll be able to see them in the sort of $150 range that offer enterprise-class features, as well as our newly revamped management console as well.
Really? Really?
Mm-hmm.
Do these access points, can you plug your industry standard antennae into them?
That's correct. What's nice about them is that Sputnik isn't building them. We've been working very closely with a number of different OEMs and who are actually, you know, building the access points themselves, and then they're putting Sputnik-powered software on top of the APs.
For $150, really?
That's the price range.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, of course, there are more advanced features and, you know, more robust ones that have dual power supplies and things like that are obviously more expensive. But
well, sure, but I can plug my 15 decibel omnidirectional antenna into them.
I'm just thinking the one that probably the first one that will come out, I don't believe it actually has, it does not have an external antenna port on it. But the enterprise class version of that access point does, which is a little bit more expensive. What we're seeing is this is just sort of the beginning of the trend, the access point manufacturers are very, very interested in putting enterprise class features onto essentially commodity hardware and adding value that way. So
that's right, because that commodity hardware that's out there sucks.
That's right. So this the one specific access point that you'll be seeing an announcement with, unfortunately, doesn't have an external antenna connector. But you know, what I'm sure we'll see in the coming months is that as more and more of these, you know, the next generation rollouts occur, that they will have lots of, you know, N connector and MMCX connectors on them.
Yeah, I certainly hope so, because I'm sure you can comment on this far better than I can, Dave. My breath is taken away by the explosive growth of Wi-Fi community nets and Wi-Fi private nets that people are just putting up everywhere. And it's really encouraging to see Wi-Fi, at least in the greater Chicago market, Wi-Fi is really causing a renaissance of the small ISP here in the Chicago market, and it's really cool.
That's wonderful. And I think that it certainly has a significant niche, you know, place to play in the, you know, sort of in the wireless ISP / hotspot arena. I think where it even gets more exciting is when you start talking about enterprise class usage of these hotspots, of these access points, you know, being able to, you know, to put together a secure, managed, firewalled, centrally controlled network that allows, you know, all of the workers in your organization to basically go wireless and never have to look back. And that's quite frankly where I think that the real growth is going to occur. I mean, certainly in the wireless ISPs and community networks and so on, it's interesting. But given the range issues and the unlicensed spectrum issues and, you know, and like, for example, we just saw one of the most recent forebearers, I think, or harbingers, when some of the folks up at, in Portland, I believe, had a community wireless node set up, and the folks over at Starbucks decided to turn on an access point as well, and they both, you know, sort of fought because they both were on Channel 1. And, you know, this is one of those things that, because it's unlicensed, there's nobody out there that can force, there's no FCC that's going to come out there and say, you have to go on, you know, on Channel 1, and you have to go on Channel 6. People are just going to kind of fight it out. And that, I think, is unfortunately one of the worrisome aspects of the hotspot market, at least, you know, in terms of delivering service, say, in a park or, you know, in a local business.
Yep. I agree with that assessment 100%.
But I think, you know, what's really, you know, there's a bunch of really interesting uses for wireless technology, you know, unlicensed, in things like point-to-multipoint, where, you know, you can actually, if you have a flat area, and particularly places like in the Midwest, where, the tallest point in a town is the water tower. And, you know, you can put a couple of sector antennas up there really, really cheap, connect them up to a bunch of different access points that are all connected into a centrally managed T1 or T3. And, you know, people can just point directional antennas at the water tower, and all of a sudden, boom, you know, you've got wireless access. And I think that, you know, the cost model for that is just phenomenal.
It really is. The only problem is up till this point, the access points themselves, it just really sucked. And I tell you, as soon as you guys get your product done, give me a ring. I'll order a few of them.
Fantastic. We'll have you as a beta customer, maybe.
We're testing all kinds of wireless equipment right now, because we're actually going to be building out into a couple of small communities in northern Illinois that I'm really suited for Wi-Fi. There's no ISPs in our area, and like you said, water tower is the tallest thing for miles and miles and miles.
Right.
So it's a pretty amazing market. Where are you at right now, Dave?
Oh, I'm in an undisclosed location.
You're on Doc's road.
Yeah, I'm. I'm here with Doc at an undisclosed location. You see, because I'm down here. Doing undisclosed things and sort of, you know, a bunch of top secret stuff. So can't really talk about that. But I'm at dinner. I'm at dinner with Doc. We're having a great time.
Okay. Well, I'm presuming that then you're not going to be at your offices for the next couple of days.
That's right. But you know how to contact me, Jeff. So, you know,
I should
we can certainly get in touch.
Dave, thanks. Why don't you put Doc back on?
Absolutely. Pleasure talking with y'all.
Yep.
Take care. All right, here's Doc.
Dave.
Hey, do you have any hot stories of the week before we talk about our special announcement and showdown?
Okay. I'm not around in front of anything right now, but the one for me is not really an announcement or news. It was just going to the Digital Hollywood show. First show I've been to that's called Digital Anything, in which the only laptop was mine. It tells you sort of where Digital Hollywood's at, I suppose. It's the first time I've gone to a conference where there's no connectivity at all. It just wasn't there. Didn't exist. Even though you had to go to somebody's hotel room in order to cover anything. But anyway, the guy from the Consumer Electronics Association pretty much declared that he was on our side, as it were, on the issue of digital rights management. He told all these Hollywood guys, hey, look, what you pejoratively call P2P is also called end-to-end, and that's the net. He said that is the net itself. The net puts everybody right next to each other, and disintermediates everything in the middle. And that's just the way it is. Good luck, you know. And it was, you know, it was definitely a very much, almost like a, he was like a Linux guy, you know. It's like, don't tread on us. Don't tell us how to do what we do. You know, get off our case. And see you in court. I mean, that's pretty much what the deal was. It's pretty good, but pretty cool. The one encouraging sign from there. The rest of it was, you know, well, one guy had really very insightful, I thought, said, we talked about XRML, which is extensible rights markup language. It's an extension of XML that's good for exchanging licensing information on the fly. Very interesting stuff. But he said, he was talking about how you can never expect new stuff to happen in from old industries, because he said you add new technology to old industries, and he says you always get the wrong answer. This is every time you're going to get the wrong answer. That was pretty interesting, I thought. So it's not like a product thing or anything like that. It's just pretty interesting 2 days down there. That was in Beverly Hills.
Yeah, and along that same thing, had we had a little more time, it's already 10 after 9, so I'll save this story for next week, but there's some interesting press starting to develop in terms of articles that are finally coming out against the digital rights people, and that's really refreshing to see.
I feel the tide turning, actually. I'm sensing it. There is... The interesting thing is there's a big division between the MPAA and the RIAA. The MPAA person said that the record industry had completely lost the faith of their customers. They're despised by their customers. And they don't want that to happen. They said they have not pursued enforcement as vigorously as the RIAA has. They think it's been a mistake for the RIAA to do that. Yeah. What'd you say, Dave?
They just want to hack into your computer.
They just want to hack into your computer. It's a little different. Yeah. But it was kind of interesting. I just sort of sensed a division among their ranks and a sense that, you know, that they are, you know, they're standing in the middle of a river, and either they get with it or they just, you know, and everybody's going to wash around them. There was one guy on stage, I forget the name of the company he was with. He was really good. But he said, hey, look, how many people here have a TiVo? Almost everybody raised their hands. How many people here fast-forward through all the ads? Be honest. Almost everybody said yes. He said, you know, some of the stuff we were saying 10 years ago, you know, that ads have negative value. We now know that. We absolutely know that. He said, this is a train wreck. The whole business model for broadcast television is a train wreck right now. You know, we're afraid to do anything new because we're afraid our shit's going to get stolen. So we can't keep up with the technology. And on the other hand, our old business model is terminal. As soon as PVRs get totally widespread and everything runs through a personal video recorder, as soon as everybody's buffering everything that they watch on television in order to get rid of the ads, then it's over. You know, it's worth it for everybody to watch something 5 minutes later in order to suck the ads out of what they're watching. And that's what people do. They'll time shift in order to get rid of the ads. You know, so once everybody has the technology, it is Linux technology too, and they all know that, to buffer everything they watch on television and selectively eliminate the business model, it's over.
It's only a matter of time before somebody comes up with a script for the to automatically filter the commercials.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
It's going to happen.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen.
It's unstoppable at this point. Yeah, that's really interesting when you say about the bankruptcy and the death of the business model. I think that one thing that really clearly illustrated the death of the business model, and I don't think the broadcast industry really got it, and that was their own big event that just happened a couple of days ago, and that was their award ceremony. For the Emmys, and who got all the awards?
HBO, the subscription model.
HBO and FX and all these cable channels cleaned their clock.
Right. Well, he said something else. He said, okay, well, Time Warner, AOL Time Warner, has $30 billion in debt. You know, I mean, compare that to $30 billion in cash in the bank that Microsoft has, and $30 billion in debt. He said, for the most part, the broadcasters have are way, way, way deep in debt, and there isn't enough advertising in the world to pull these guys out, and they're not facing up to it. He was like pretty much saying, you want to see the dot-com thing happen for an old industry? It's coming up. Stay tuned. Kind of, yeah, pretty interesting.
Yep, very interesting.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Doc.
You're welcome.
We're going to have to, I'm glad you remembered to call us.
Well, and I got your message. That's how I was fighting traffic. I was thinking of it earlier, and I just totally forgot about it. And then, you know, as I was trying to get work things with trying to pick up my kid and seeing Dave on the way, and, you know, he's passing one direction, I'm passing the other, and so.
Yeah.
So I was just doing a bunch of navigation, and then I sat here and I said to Dave, who would be calling asking me to a conference call? And he says, well, it's Tuesday. It's the Linux show. Oh, fuck. Oh, no. Sorry. Anyway. But, oh, no. That was, because the way it sounded, it's like, you know, press this if you want to join a conference with. I didn't know what that was about. So,
yeah. Well,
anyway.
Make sure you tell Dave thanks for jumping into the show, and also tell him I've got a whole pile of GeekPack files and AOTC files to send him for the website.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, I have some, too. So we'll hopefully maybe tomorrow. I don't know when he's going home, but, you know,
yep.
Or when he gets near the net again, but we'll deal with it.
Yeah, I finally had a chance to harvest them off of a hard drive that was in another machine and got them all ready to go. So
okay.
Well, let's go ahead and seeing as it's already after 9 o'clock, let's jump into segment number two. Segment number
okay.
two is
Hey, guys, do you mind if I drop out so I can...
Not at all.
Okay, guys. Take it easy.
Yep. Kevin, have we got the form up on the website yet?
Yep.
Have you tested it?
Yep.
And it works?
Seems to.
Okay. Well, that's good, because I'd like to make an announcement. If you go to the Linux Show website, you will see a link on there that is in tonight's posting, talking about the show tonight, that there is a DSL business offering that we have been putting together. And actually what we want to announce tonight is sort of a package deal, you might say, is an effort that has been underway for the better part of 3.5 to 4 months. And our move is all a part of this, and consolidating equipment is all part of this. A way for us to come up with both ways of reducing our overall costs of broadcasting this show to you, because you people have no idea how much bandwidth the show consumes. It's just enormous. And so not only to lower our costs, but to actually find ways of increasing revenue that don't include us going to the vendors and begging for money. Now, we still do from time to time go to the vendors and beg for money when catastrophes happen or when we need to get ourselves across the country to an expo for one reason or another. We'll still be soliciting sponsors, but we really try to avoid them because it allows us a little bit of editorial freedom when we don't have our business model based upon advertising revenue. You compound that with the fact that it's just damned hard to get advertising revenue these days. If you don't believe me, just send an email to the staff at Slashdot or Linux Today or one of the other geek portals and ask them how much they're making per thousand banner ads these days. It's really not very much money. You're doing today really good if you're getting a buck and a half, a thousand banner ads, whereas back in the heyday of the dot-com industry, Yahoo was getting as high as $60 a thousand for banner ads. So things have changed a lot in terms of the models that support portals and news sites and broadcast entities like the Linux Show. So what we decided to do was to change things around a little bit go to the sponsors a lot less and go to the people who actually listen to the show and come up with a way of getting you guys out there to open up your pockets to get money to us to help us underwrite the cost of bringing the show. And, again, we didn't want to ask for cash contributions because we didn't think that was appropriate, although you're more than welcome to do so if you want to. We'd be happy to take a check. But what we'd rather do is give you something that is of value to you and something that you would have likely bought anyways, and make it available through what we're going to be calling our partner program on the website. And so if you look at that link and you click on the link, what is the URL for that? Kevin, is it on the page?
Yeah.
Okay. What is the text for it? What does it say in the link?
Just a second. Let me pull it up again.
Well, anyways, Kevin will tell us when he finds it. But anyways, if you go there, there's a form. And that form is an information form. It's not an order blank. It's an information form for you to fill out your name and all your contact information for the first three offerings of our partner program. And the first three offerings of our partner program include a service offering from the Geek Access Network, which is a brand new ISP that has been under construction for several months, and they are going to shortly be offering services through technology portals. They're going to be offering services like dial-up service, shell access, things like that geeks like to get at very reasonable prices, or at least I think they'll be very reasonable prices. And so the product that we've got on there, the Geek Access Business DSL, is their first product offering. And the first product offering is a package that I sat down with them as a person in the IT industry who is constantly trying to provision my own clients. I told them what I would be able to make use of as a DSL product because I have been for years a reseller of COVID and various other, probably a dozen different DSL providers. And they all have a lot of problems with them for one reason or another, especially their seeming inability to stay in business. But the service offering that we're going to have is a pretty unique one in that it's pretty low cost for what you're getting. It is entirely a business class service, and what I mean by business class service, there are absolutely no caps, there are no port blocks, there are no nothing. It is a traditional business class service that has an open pipe that you can do with it as you please, and you can make use of the total amount of bandwidth 24/7 if you so choose. It's the ISP's problem to figure out how to juggle the bandwidth on their end. It's not our problem. So they've packaged together this business class Radisol service along with five static IPs. I insisted that it had to include five static IPs because every client that I ever install with DSL, I like to have static IPs so that we can put a DNS server and a couple of an email server, what have you, whatever we put in the client's office. So had to come with five static IPs. And then the real quirker was getting them to agree to considering routers or DSL modems as a completely optional thing. Most DSL providers insist that you buy their Nettopia 7200 or whatever it is that particular DSL ISP uses, and sometimes the cost of those DSL routers and their installation charges for installing those routers are pretty outrageous. And if anybody's going to make money on the router and the installation of that router, it should be the IT pro. In other words, I would rather put it in my pocket than in the pocket of COVID. So that was sort of the general process that I was discussing this with the ISP. And so they put together this package, and we've agreed upon an initial, what we call benchmark price, which is $89.88. But the benchmark price is sort of not a fixed thing. It is not likely to go higher than $89.88, but it may go lower. What they did is they calculated out averages of circuit costs from the incumbent local exchange carriers, created this equation, came up with an average cost, and after they put their profit margin in, and we threw a couple of dollars in on top of it so that the Linux show actually made a few dollars on the exchange of it all, that their price would come out on average no more than $89 or $90, but could be significantly less. Could be as low as like $69 in some isolated places around the country. And so this is really very cheap for a business class of service. It would be comparable to the product that's being sold at Speakeasy for, I think it's $109 or $119. I forgot the price that Speakeasy is offering a similar product for. But that gives you an idea of how it's positioned. The other two things that are also on that document on our website are a special being offered by the guys from Little Blue Box, taking $50 off their basic server that they're going to give directly to us for people who place orders, or $100 off for people who place orders for their dual drive system. And the guys from Little Blue Box then kick us back a little money. The last thing on the list is a wireless node offering, which the details on this are still a little iffy. And so what we really need to do is to get people to participate so we can get a better grasp on how this is all going to work out. Geek Access has agreed to, in general principle, the idea that they're going to help promote hotspots around the country. And so what they're going to do is knock $10 a month off the DSL cost so that $89 becomes $79. If you participate in their hotspot program and purchase some low cost, who knows, maybe we'll use Dave Sifry's access points that he was just talking about a few minutes ago. Wouldn't that be a hoot if that happens? But you purchase additional equipment within the structure of the program. Typically, the equipment will probably be around $500. The reason why we say that is the high-gain antennas that mount on a roof are generally in the cost of about $250. But the idea is to promote you people out there to build hotspots for your neighborhood. That's the whole goal. And this is something that you should seriously think about because you're doing good for your neighborhood. The additional cost of $500 a month will allow you to charge $5 or $10 a piece from all the people in your neighborhood and provide them with high-speed internet service. And so who knows, maybe you can get your high-speed internet for free. But that's a little bit about the launch of the partner program. We're hoping that people will go out there, fill out the form, so that we can start working a few test people through the program, get some DSL people installed, do a few hotspot specs, and then we'll write more detailed FAQs over the course of the next few weeks. But there you have it. That's the announcement. This is how we're going to attempt to pay the bills here at the Linux Show, is hope you'll buy stuff that providers of the services will then kick us back a little money. A real simple formula. So that's it. That's our announcement. On behalf of the entire crew here at the Linux Show, we'd like to thank you all for joining us once again. We want you to come back next week. We're going to have a really interesting show. The theme of next week's show is education. We're going to have a couple of people from a couple of different schools here in Illinois, and I'm going to have Arnie hopefully go scouting some schools in California. And what we're going to be doing is talking about Linux implementations at various levels of school systems around the country. And in particular, one of the things we're going to be talking about is building Beowulf clusters in high schools, a very interesting new phenomenon that has become popular here in Illinois. It's really sort of started by some of the lugs in southern Illinois that were constantly building Beowulf clusters at their user group events. This has sort of spun off into the local school systems from the middle of the state, Champaign-Urbana on south. This is really the thing to do now in the high schools is build Linux Beowulf clusters. So that'll be the thing next week. Join us, and we'll bring you the next edition of the Tuesday Night Linux Show. Until then, we're out of here.
So you need an email server, huh? Well, check out one of our sponsors. What? The Linux Show has sponsors? Yeah, well, how the hell do you think we pay the bandwidth bill around here? Well, it's really more the phone bill, not the bandwidth bill. Phone bill is killing us. But anyways, back to our sponsor. Check out the folks at www.littlebluebox.com and buy their stuff and sponsor.